Hi, this is Hugh Greenwood from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean Basich.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Basich. You can find me on X at Hashtag Kangas, Instagram Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast, TikTok Hashtag Kangaroos 1. So tonight I am joined by the lads Mark Hello and Frank the Tank Descalzo, and I was also joined by Jesse last minute. He was a last minute inclusion. He couldn't make it later this week, so I decided to get him on tonight. Now before we get into tonight's episode, I do have Mark Beach Jones on X, who's trying to get rid of a ticket for the round 4 game against the Brisbane Lions, the gather round. He can't make it. He's still got a spare ticket. So if you want to hit him up at Mark Beach Jones, so that's Mark B E C H Jones, just hit him up if you want a ticket. He's a member of Wrexham Football Club, so yeah, good TV show there, Mark. Welcome to Wrexham. So hit him up. He's going to get rid of it soon if no one's interested, so he will return it to Ticketek, so make sure to hit him up. He's known as Mark BJ. I just realised what I said there, Mark BJ. Yeah, it's at Mark Beach Jones, so look up that. Anyways, we talked a lot tonight about the positives and the negatives of the performance on Saturday. Did we like it? Did we not like it? We talked a lot about individuals, where some players are at, and in the first two rounds of the season, is it a bit too early to be swinging the axe? So there was a lot to talk about. We talked for well over an hour. I'm not going to waste any more of your valuable time. Let's bring on the boys, Mark, Jesse, and Frank, to talk about it. Tonight, I welcome back to the show my Tuesday regulars, Mark Hello and Frank the Tank Descalzo. But I am joined by Jesse, who can't be here later in the week, so he's decided to join us tonight. Jesse, welcome back. Boys, welcome back. And we have a bit to go through. And Frank, I will start with you. And how do you see the game on Saturday afternoon? Were you glass half full and focus on the positives, like our president sort of did, or glass half empty and disappointed, particularly in that third quarter where probably in about a 10 to 15 minute period, we pretty much lost the game?
Yeah, look, I probably left the stadium definitely glass half empty. And then probably in reflection over the last sort of 48 hours, I think, like a lot of things, there were enormous amount of positives. I guess probably the most disappointing thing is, Dean, just for a brief second, I dared to dream halfway through that second quarter that we were going to hear the song at the end of the game. And that was probably the most disappointing thing, is when you just get that little pang of, I think we've got this, and then it all fell apart. So, yeah, disappointing, but, still there was a lot to like.
Yeah, sometimes it's the hope that kills you, Frank.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely, I mean, the way we were peppering that forward 50 there, halfway through the second quarter, I couldn't see Fremantle firing a shot. Mm. And then all of a sudden it kind of turned and we just didn't have the ability to put the brakes on. And once they hit the lead, in that third quarter, I thought, that's it. I can't see us wrestling back the momentum. And as it played out, it was probably right. But, disappointing.
Mm. Mark, how did you see the performance? Were you a bit like Frank? Like, I think we talked a little bit off there. That was some of the best footy we've played in about a quarter and a half, or at least till the 20-minute mark of the second quarter. But then it was followed up by I suppose a loss of composure, a little bit of lack of leadership, and just completely lost the system there for about a quarter and a bit, and it effectively cost us a game and any chance of causing a boil over. I guess a boil over, in terms of the betting or the general public, but we certainly gave ourselves a chance. How did you see it anyway, Mark?
Yeah, first of all, I think Fremantle's going to be a very good side this year. I think, forget last year, they... the way they played against Brisbane and the way they came back from looking in real trouble against us, they're going to be a decent side. They're not going to be a fun side to play in Perth, that's for sure. Yeah. So outside of that, I just thought we blew it in the last 5 minutes of the second quarter. I think we should have been a lot further in front at halftime. We just missed a couple of easy goals to take us 6 goals up, but then they suddenly kick one. kicked another. Suddenly, we're only three goals up at halftime, and the momentum was lost. And I think the young guys, I don't know, they lost some confidence going in at halftime, it felt like. And they just, yeah, and then they didn't have the experience to come out of halftime and then and do what they did at the start of the first quarter, which was apply that really intense pressure to put Fremantle on the back foot again, which would have got our crowd going and would have restarted our momentum. Once they sort of, that 30-minute period, it was 10 minutes, of the last 10 minutes of the second quarter, or last 5 minutes, and the first 5 minutes of the third quarter probably killed us, I think. And it was a bit late after. But I just put that down to inexperience. In terms of what I saw from the players during that first 45 minutes of the game, that's the best thing I've seen in 4 years. So that shows me where we're heading now. So I think a big win's not far off. I can't predict when it's going to happen because we're playing. Unfortunately, our first five rounds are all tough. But I won't be surprised by anything from after seeing that. I think Clarkson's a great coach. He's got a good young coaching group around him. I think we've got the four superstars that everyone's talking about, or the young superstars of the draft these the last 2 years, are all firing. But there's plenty of other positives outside of those guys as well. So overall, my glass was definitely half full.
That's good to hear, Mark. Now, Jesse, I was sitting with you at the game and the wheels fell off pretty quickly in the third, and we showed signs of life in the last, but just little things like Nick Larkey dropping an uncontested mark. He got rid of his opponent really well. And then out on a full that was given as a boundary throw-in in the back pocket. We could have got the margin back to within 14 points, but then a couple of turnovers, and I think it blew out to 26, and it was effectively game over. It was a little bit deflating, wasn't it, Jesse?
Yeah, it was, especially after that second quarter. You kind of said it. We almost dared to hope. we were playing beautiful football. It's hard to... It's hard to be positive after a loss, but there was a direction to it. You saw where we were heading in that first and most of that second quarter. But, yeah, look, it is disappointing when you put on, one goal one and they chuck on seven goals five. I mean, they could have kicked 10 goals if they'd kicked straight in a quarter. It was pretty bad. And we showed life in the last, which was good. But, yeah, I think what cooked us, like what we've said, is the fact that we had some easy opportunities to score at the end of the second, probably blow the margin out to near 40, maybe even 45, and we didn't capitalise. And then we didn't really trouble it at all in the third. And then at the fourth, I think we had a couple of shots at the start, but they were behinds again. So every opportunity that we had to either put the game really out of reach or get back in the game, we kind of blew, which was a shame. To me, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit later, to me there's some pretty obvious structural changes that, I'm not Alistair Clarkson, but I think there's some pretty obvious things and gaps there that need to be addressed. While I think it's really, really positive signs, I think there's some little tweaks we can make that means that we won't go into the third looking so cooked. Because I actually think that a large part of it came down to the fact that come the third quarter, a lot of the players were cooked just from the way we were playing, the speed we were playing at, the aggression we were playing with, and the fact that we had missed some shots. They'd got some goals back and it left us a bit deflated. We looked tired in that third. We weren't winning the ball. We weren't tackling. We weren't doing anything really. So, I think there's some obvious things that hopefully we can take into the next few weeks, albeit against tough opposition.
Yeah, that's a fair point in the third quarter. I think we only laid about eight tackles. I mean, at the end of the day, we only laid about, 41 tackles, which is a pretty poor standard, really. I mean, whichever way you want to look at it. I know we want to play an open, uncontested, fast brand of football, but still, you've got to put the pressure on. And, we didn't do it for long enough. But, a lot to like for a half of footy anyway. Frank, I'm interested to get your thoughts on Sonia Hood, our president. She was replying to a lot of messages on X to people who are probably a little frustrated. I think they are battles you can't win, Frank, and you aren't on Twitter or X anymore. But do you think it's a good idea for a president of a club replying to messages of supporters from her own club? Because I just don't see the point to it. What do you think?
No, Dean, I think it just stokes the fire. I think you just let it go. And what do they say? Take the high road. It's a battle you're never going to win. And the more you respond, the more it probably attracts people to have their say. So it's probably not something a bit like I think we all saw with Taron Thomas last year or the year prior, I think now, when he responded to comment after a poor game. And it blew up. Just let it slide, Dean, I think. Just let it go. It's not the place to voice her opinion. I think we all know what she thinks of the playing group and where her heart lies. And responding to social media is like that is just a waste of time.
Yeah, I mean, and our big responses. Mark, you probably would have seen some of them. What do you think about it?
No, I haven't seen them because I've probably changed my phone over in the last few days. And now I'm locked out of my Twitter account. Because I've got it when I first set it up, I had a different email address, so now I can't get back in. So I've decided I'm going to probably use that opportunity to leave the whole thing alone for a year and get out of Twitter. But my manager told me it was damaging my brand anyway because I was spending too much time on there. I was getting overexposed and it was damaging my podcast brand, so I've decided to get out permanently now.
Well, it's damaging mine too, Mark. You didn't think of that, did you?
It was definitely damaging yours, yes.
Yeah, right. I don't know if I've got a brand to damage, but yeah, keep going.
So Bomber Boss and a few others are going to be very happy to see the back of me. But I don't think it as much as it didn't benefit me, it benefited a lot less than the president of the club, that's for sure. So I think she does nearly everything right as the president. I think she's been amazing for us. I know not everyone agrees with that. Particularly, people don't like us getting involved in what they see as political opinions and things like that. But that aside, I think she was a major part of how we got Clarkson. I think she's very business savvy. She's very smart. She's a great people manager. I don't think she needs to get involved with the negativity. It's too hard. It's impossible. You're not going to. When we lose a game, there's always going to be angry supporters who can't. Mm. They're just emotionally upset and they're going to vent online or on social media anywhere. It's just people do at the game, unfortunately. You can't do much about it. So I just don't think it's worth it.
No. Jesse, did you see any of her replies to individuals or did you miss it like Frank and Mark did?
No, look, I saw one of them in particular. I saw the one where, I saw one of them in particular, and I didn't think that she needed to comment back.
No,
I thought the comment that was made to her was a bit like the one I saw. She posted something talking about the local council or asking why they had closed a road, and someone said, "I'd rather my president focusing on my football club," and it's like, well. She's a human being. She's allowed to post whatever she wants on social media, and she has a life. So, you know, when she's on her off time, she's allowed to complain about her local council. I don't see how there's any problem about that. So, I didn't have an issue with her kind of giving a little bit of a nip back on that one. But, yeah, look, you're not going to win it. Yeah, there's nothing to gain out of it. And I agree with what the boy said. I think she's been wonderful for the club, and I don't think she needs to justify herself to, to the average fan, especially on something that has nothing to do with football. So, yeah, look, I can understand some people are frustrated with her. I don't think she's the right person to take the frustration out on. I can give you a couple other names of people that would be great to voice frustration on. Cam Joyce. I'd be not going after her. It just seems a bit rough.
No, fair enough. Well, yeah, I know you've mentioned. Or I don't know if you've mentioned on a podcast or off air to me, Jesse. But I know you're not a fan of Cameron Joyce. But look, we'll move forward. We'll continue with the game that happened. Now, Frank, the back line seems to be copying a fair bit of criticism, but some of our turnovers up the ground, like LDU handballing straight to a free A player in the second quarter, Jaden Stevenson shanking a kick, left them badly exposed. I think, like the first quarter and a half, if we can maintain some sort of pressure up the field, Toby Pink and Callum Dawson can be decent intercept players. They showed that, didn't they, Frank?
I thought they were fantastic, both of them, in the opening quarter and a bit. No doubt, Dean, like you've pointed out, that when there's pressure on the ball further up the ground, it makes their job a lot easier. And you're right, a couple of horrible turnovers. There was also one where Jaden Stevenson handballed blindly to a Fremantle player. I think it was in the third quarter, which caused a goal. And they're very, very hard to defend. I mean, you saw how we made the Freo defence look in the first 45 minutes. I think it's got a lot to do with what happens further up the ground. I didn't think that there was a lot more that Callum Dawson or Toby Pink could have done. The ball comes in, with monotonous regularity for, 45 minutes. You get what happened last year and the year before. It's very, very hard to defend. And they're not, we didn't get them as, all Australian key defenders. They're probably a bit of a safety net. And we've called on them, and I thought that they did reasonably well. There's others in the back line that probably struggled a lot more than Dawson and Ping.
Well, Mark, that's a good segue to this next defender, Aiden Corr. Now, he's probably the one tall that's probably hasn't shown much in the first two rounds. Looks a bit underdone after not having much of a pre-season. He's probably the one backman, the key defender. Like, if Charlie Comyn comes in, which we'll talk about later, he's probably the one that would go out, because I think Toby Pink and Callum Dawson actually look pretty good.
I think they've been outstanding. I think Comyn, though, has to play this week, given we've got Mackay and who's the other superstar?
Kurnow.
Yeah, sorry. His dad taught me at school, so I shouldn't remember the name. yes, they're superstars, and Mackay's well over, I think he's about 205 centimetres. And Comyn's around 200. I think Comyn needs to play this week for his athleticism and his height and his strength in the contest in the air. And I think Corr's struggling in that area in the first few rounds. And you're right, he just had an underdone pre-season. I'm not writing him off by any stretch of the imagination. He was very good at the back end of last year. But he looks underdone. So I think I'd leave Dawson and Pink are doing a great job. I'd leave them there. I'd let Sader Corr just go back. We just probably need you to get a bit more conditioning and play two or three VFL games and give Charlie a go. He's apparently starring in the VFL anyway. He's had a good preseason. He's ready to go. I'd bring him in now.
No, fair enough. We'll talk about the VFL later. There's obviously a bit of news with injuries there and a few players, and Charlie Comyn will be mentioned. Jesse, we talked about this off the air. Are we too small in that back line? Outside the tall three, we've got Zach Fisher, Bailey Scott, and Colby McKercher. They all look a little undersized as that running half-back defender, because they get cross-matched playing a zone defense in particular, and they lose pretty much every one-on-one battle if they get cross-matched.
You've got Luke McDonald back there, though, don't you get, Dean?
Yeah, he's just come back in, but there's still three smalls. Is it one too many? That we've got. Miller Bergman, obviously, he would have been a good in, but there's obviously an injury there now with him long term. So what do you think, Jesse? I mean, we keep talking about Bailey Scott, that he needs to play up the field, but Alistair Clarkson really wants to play him in the back half.
Yeah, look, it's not necessarily the size for me. It's the type of players we've got. So if you look at that back line, like you just mentioned, so McKercher's played exclusively down back. Sheezel has played exclusively down back, hasn't had a CBA for the year, which is a little bit odd for mine because he did in the preseason. So you've got those two boys who are running off the half back line. Now, neither of them have defensive players. McKercher in particular doesn't know how to defend, and that's fine. He's been a midfielder his whole career as a junior. So you've got these two boys who, absolutely killing at their disposal off the half back line. They're racking up disposal, and that's really, really good. But then you add Fisher doing the same thing. Then you have Bailey Scott, who is doing the same thing. So all of a sudden, you're rotating four small running players, which suits our game style. Absolutely suits our game style. We're moving the ball with a lot more intent. We're not hacking the ball forward as much. I mean, it looks like gone are the years where we don't have a halfback who can kick, Sean Attlee. We used to complain about it endlessly, and now we have a lot of players who can actually dispose the ball off the halfback line, which is great. But none of them are defenders. You have Dawson, who has been really, really good the first 2 weeks, I have to say. I think he's been very impressive. But ideally in your team, he's playing as your second hall. And you know, a Logue or someone's taking the key. Or he takes the key and Logue's able to intercept a little bit more. That can be worked out. But ideally, he is taking probably a second just because of his size and weight. You got Pink, who I thought was really good on the weekend, especially the first two quarters. He was really, really solid. He did some really good things, especially in the first quarter down back. So I was impressed with him, and he'll only get better. So you have two key defenders, maybe a little bit undersized, very inexperienced. Then you have Core, who's completely out of form and not offering anything at the moment, really. Yeah, Donald, who's just come back. We've effectively rushed both of those back. Neither of them are quick players. So what we have is we have four completely defensive-minded players, of which we're playing, you know, three at a time and then, rotating one around, or we play all four and then we play, you know, two of the attackers. And then all of our attackers can't defend. So we've seen the first 2 weeks endlessly. Somehow Fisher is ending out one-on-one half the time against an opposition small or medium forward, sometimes even a tall forward. Mm. So sometimes you've got him trying to defend, which I don't think is fair on him, against players significantly better than him, let alone, you know, McKercher, Sheasel, etc. There's no lockdown defender, small defender. And, you know, you can say Luke McDonald, but Luke McDonald, I reckon I could run quicker than Luke McDonald. He's not a quick player, especially after the injuries coming back. And that's the main worry for me. When the opposition gets a run on, because the way we play, if the midfield becomes – the forward line doesn't apply pressure, we know that. If the midfield gets tired and it can't apply the pressure and the ball's coming in quickly with an inexperienced tall defence and a small defence which doesn't actually defend, you're in a lot of trouble. And I think we saw that in the third. Freo could have scored, as I said, 10-plus goals if they'd kicked straight. And we had no ability to stop them unless your midfield gets back on top. So – I've said a few times that Goda was a massive loss in the first one, because while he is generally a good kid, while he's an attacking player, he is also someone who has grown up knowing how to defend. He's done defense as a junior. So, and he showed that. He was good against Toby Green in that game. Bergman, I think, is similar, maybe even a little bit more defensive minded, and he's a little bit taller, but he's quick. And now that he's injured, we don't really have anyone who can go into that position. So, I think it's a gap for us. And I don't think we have the backline mix just right. I'd be moving, as we've said, a Scott up the ground onto the wing. We do need to find somehow. We've got to find a lockdown small/medium who's got some pace to go on the opposition smalls, because they're just going to kill us otherwise. There's a lot of positive down there with the ball movement, but there's some negatives as well.
Yeah, no, true. Frank, we'll segue to the midfield. And Tom Powell, shout out to Josh or Steve Borden, a la Sting, who's trolling me on X to finally recognise and make me admit I was wrong on Tom Powell. Look, he was our best player on the weekend, Frank. 29 disposals, 500-plus metres gained, 8 clearances, a team-high 9 scoring involvements. This looks like the breakout year we're after, weren't we, Frank, with Tom Powell?
It certainly looks like it, Dean. He was terrific, and he played a significant part in that first 45 minutes of almost domination. I feel silly saying it, seeing we lost the game, but he was terrific. His handball, I don't think anyone's ever questioned his ball usage. It's just been rather... You know, has he been able to rack up the numbers? And this is 2 weeks in a row that he's been able to do it. He seems to have found a really good balance with his inside and outside ball. Absolutely wrapped to see him playing the footy that he has. Probably like all of us, a bit concerned where he was this time last year. But he seems to have settled in well into that midfield. And if he can drag a couple of others along with him, I think it'll all bode really well for the future.
kicked a nice goal, a nice snap goal. Look, we've never questioned his talent, but he's finding that consistency through four quarters now. And, pretty much with Jai Simkin playing a high half forward, he's our most second most experienced midfielder in there, and he's only 22 himself, just turned 22. So we're certainly hoping he can keep this going and have a big year. Mark, another good game from LDU as well, and nothing we don't expect from him. But George Wardlaw got the Rising Star nomination, and rightfully so. 23 touches, and he's providing a really good second fiddle or third fiddle with LDU and Tom Powell. He does get a lot of the ball. I think the weakness with him, Mark, and this might be a bit harsh, his kicking still worries me a little bit. Am I being a bit harsh there?
Well, he would certainly say so. He in his interview, he said his kicking's one of his strengths, so he'll be very, very disappointed to hear what you've just said. I was just going to say, George, if you're listening, I completely disagree with what Dean said there. I think you've got a great kick on you.
He's listening to the podcast, isn't he? That's why you're sort of saying that.
Yeah, no, he absolutely listens every week. Yep,
I'm sure he does.
I think about 10 of them get together every night to watch it, to listen to it, I should say. I think you're right. I think that's probably the one. I think part of it, though, is when he gets the ball, he's moving at extreme speed and exploding out, but sometimes he just hasn't got the time to compose himself. But I think he's getting better at that, and I think that won't be a long term. I don't think that's a skill issue. I just think it's a composure thing sometimes. But you're right. You're going to point out any weakness with him. He's turned it over a few times, but he's my favourite player at the club at the moment. I just love the way he plays. It feels like I'm watching Glenn Archer, just in a different position.
That's actually a good comparison, yeah.
Well, just the way he explodes, you feel like he'll never let you down. He'll just do everything he can to do the right thing by the team every moment he's in the game. It's just, he's amazing to watch like that. And there aren't many people that accelerate into trouble. And Glenn, I used to always say that about Glenn Archer, the way he used to do that. And Wardlaw's the same. He just doesn't know any other way. He's absolutely amazing. So, yeah, I love watching him play. For a second-year player, he's a freak. If he doesn't win the Rising Star, it's going to be a bloody good player who beats him. And I don't think McKercher, as good as McKercher and Dersmer are, I don't think they're in the same league at this point anyway as him. I think I can't understand how he couldn't win it this year the way he's going. If his body stays right, I think he's going to deserve it by the end of the year, because he's got an all-round game. He's now got, I think he had 13 uncontested possessions, 10 contested possessions. So he's now added the run now that his tank's built up to get some handball receives and on top of all the contested stuff. But his pressure acts and his tackling for a guy in his second year is off the charts. It's you'd have to go back to a Melbourne player who's had his own troubles in the last 12 months.
Very similar.
Of a similar type of player. And Joel Selwood would be the other one that reminds me of him as well in their first couple of years. He's a superstar. The questions for me on them, and the three players you've mentioned, I think, are set now as key midfielders. It's the second round of midfielders coming through, and then the question is, do we need another extractor in there like a Phillips, or do we persevere with Lazaro because we need someone more with a bit more speed on the outside and wait for him to catch fire? Because that's the part, the second tier of midfielders are not quite there yet. And I think Simkin had 13 or 14 possessions. Lazaro sort of had 10 or 11 possessions. Tucker didn't have that many possessions. So the three guns, as in LDU, Powell and Wardlaw were all fantastic, but it fell away quite badly after that. So you really need five midfielders firing to win games, and I think we're a couple short at the moment.
Yeah, well, Jesse, we might as well go to Charlie Lazaro. With only 13 touches and subbed out with minus 2 metres gained in the game, had a great pre-season. Do you think now his spot is in trouble for Good Friday?
Yeah, I do. The thing that got me about Lazaro is obviously in the preseason, he got a lot of centre bounce time. So he got a lot of centre bounce time. That's what we brought him in for. Last week, he had four centre bounces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did see that.
Four, which is very odd. Very, very odd. Especially because, the week before against GWS, he had something like 18. So they played a different role with him on the weekend. It was almost like there was such dominance
in that. It didn't work. It didn't work in week one, though.
No, it didn't. No, look, it absolutely didn't. But I think you've got to give someone a few weeks to add it. And that's why I thought it was a little bit odd, especially because this is, you know, one of the things I said off air, that I felt like the LDU Power Wardlaw, and I tweeted this during the week, they were so heavily overused in this game in terms of their centre-bounce attendance. Yeah, there was just such a gap between their centre-bounces and the next highest. And that just says to me that you're just absolutely cooking your midfielders early, and you're not rotating people through there. It was very, very odd. So
that's a lack of trust between the top three and the next three, and that's the issue they've got at the moment.
Absolutely. And
of course, they don't have Taron Thomas to go in there anymore. So
No. But I would have liked to have seen, for example, Zerha go in there maybe a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Burst. Yep. I thought we only really put him in there when the game went past. But yeah, look, in terms of Lazaro, he didn't offer a lot on the weekend at all, and I think in the first week he didn't offer a massive amount. That what he's meant to be bringing to that midfield is a bit of pace compared to what we have at the moment. But I'm just, I'm not sure. I mean, ideally, I'd like to see him get another crack at it and, you know, and get a few weeks to actually give it a go, see if he can come good and use his pace to our advantage in the midfield, because that is something which is beneficial. He's also a very fit player, so it means he'll be able to, you know, really crack in for a long period of time. But the fact that they subbed him out over some other players that I think we all thought should have been subbed out says to me that they lost a bit of patience with him. So I would not be surprised whatsoever if he was on the out this week or played the sub role.
I wasn't at the game. Where was? Can you guys tell me where Tucker played?
Mostly wing. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so they played. They were playing Tucker mostly on the wing.
Because both our wings hardly touched it.
Yeah, they did nothing. Our wings did nothing at all. Dylan Stevens was terrible. I don't think there's a polite way of putting it, to be honest. Mm. And Tucker is. I think I've said the last few weeks that, you know, Tucker doesn't offer anything. So, yeah, look, there's a few changes I'd absolutely be making. There's some pretty key ones in my mind that I'd be making. But yeah, look, in terms of the Lazaro question. I'm not sure they're going to keep him around based on the fact that they subbed him. It's a bit disappointing. Just quickly on Tom Power, just as a bit of an interesting fact at the moment, obviously very, very small, pool to go by the fact that we've only played two games, but currently he's the seventh highest rated player rating and midfielder in the comp. That's midfielder, midfielder and mid-forward. So Isaac Heaney is number one. Caleb Sarong, number two. Bond, Warple, Chad Warner, Jack Finney, Tom Powell, LDU, Christian Petrarca, Zach Butters. It's a pretty impressive list. And
yeah, that's a pretty good list, you know, in that top 10 as well.
Yeah, and if, I think if you compare it to, for example, the highest disposals he's ever averaged in his career, 16.6, which is, funny enough, his first year. Last year, 16.4. This year, averaging 27. Clearances, his highest he's ever averaged is 2.5. This year, averaging 7 clearances a game. That's ridiculous numbers for someone who's played, 47 games. And
get his little mate Phillips in there with him.
Yeah, well, look, I've always had massive raps on both of them, and I think Phillips. I think there's a part of me that says Phillips, given 27 CBAs like Power was, consistently would put out a good game. We saw it against the Bombers last year. He was given bulk centre bounce attendance time, and he performed. Look, I'd have no issue given that maybe he was a bit of form with him playing bulk minutes in the VFL, just get some confidence. But yeah, look, I think they're missing a trick in the midfield, and I think we saw that on the weekend. They were cooked going into that third quarter, and there was we just kept rolling the same people out, and they looked buggered.
Yeah.
Now, Frank, what do you think of Dylan Stevens? Yeah, a promising preseason. We just talked about him. Was barely sighted all game on the wing. Only 8 touches, Frank. And we need him to lift, don't we? Especially if we got to play Baylor Scott in the back 50.
Yeah, absolutely. There's probably, I think my biggest concern at the moment, Dean, is probably our bottom 6, as far as the blokes that really contribute very, very little, and he's probably one of them that just it's just yeah, nowhere near what's going to constitute a helpful contribution from, particularly in the position that he plays. So, there'd be some real concerns about what he's bringing to the table at the moment.
No, definitely. I mean, the wings, it seems like, we played Darcy Tucker. We talked about that, Frank, and Dylan Stevens. They barely touched the ball. You know, I mean, I guess it leads me to, is Darcy Tucker, like I've seen people put in team changes for this week. Not one person seems to have mentioned Darcy Tucker. How come he's escaping scrutiny? Because I thought he'd be on top of the list to take out of the team.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say, Dean, is from at the game, I thought we tried to own the corridor in the first 45 minutes. It seemed to be a real high-octane type of footy. And then when we lost control of it, Freo sort of went through the middle and we couldn't use the wings well enough. We just didn't have any marking targets. So whether they're a little bit of a victim of circumstance, Tucker and Stevens, I don't know. But look, maybe it's just, I don't know why you'd pick one ahead of the other. Their stats are literally identical. In fact, Dylan Stevens has had triple the amount of tackles that Darcy Tucker's had for the year. When I say that, Stevens has had 6 and Tucker's had 2 for the year. So if anything, you're probably right, Dean. They're probably, if you're going to really point a light on one of the two, it'd probably be Darcy Tucker at the moment.
Yeah, I'll definitely be doing that. I mean, Mark, we've just been talking about the wing, a player that played their last quarter and seemed to have a good last quarter and be everywhere and get into a few inside 50s was Bailey Scott, but we keep persisting with him in a back 50. He's the best wingman at the club. We just talked about a couple of wingmen that barely touched the ball. I mean, why isn't he playing on a wing idea?
Yeah, well, I'd say Eddie Ford won't be the sub again because he can also play wing if
he can.
So he'll be playing either he's not on the forward line, he'll be on the wing this week. Because he can actually take marks out on the wing. He can be an option to get as a kick out option, as a leading option, and he can go back and help in defense as well. If they're a bit undersized with the young defense we've got, particularly the smaller ones. So I'd be looking at him to play wing forward, and he can go across both. And I think you're right about Scott. I think if Bergman had been available, I think he would have come in and Scott would have gone up to the wing. But unfortunately, is it a syndesmosis? Not a bad one, but a syndesmosis injury that's going to keep him out for a while. That option's gone now. And Archer's still a number of weeks away in terms of that lockdown key defender. We were bemoaning we don't really have in the back line. So their options are a bit skinny there. Taylor missed a lot of the preseason, and he lacks pace, so I don't think they're in a rush to get him in at the moment. But he does fill a role on the wing when he plays. So he is an option if the other two don't start improving. But yeah, I can't argue with you. It's just both wingmen gave nothing. So either defensively or attacking. That said, their running defensive running might have been, I can't tell from watching it on TV. Maybe their defensive running played a bigger part than I could see. But yeah, they're going to have to get more than 14 possessions between them for a game. That's not going to work.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what selection brings. But Jesse, I wanted to save Tristan Sherry for you. You wanted to talk about him tonight. 18 disposals, 5 marks, 9 tackles, 6 clearances. He was pretty good, but Luke Jackson was best on ground. I always find it funny that a player can be in your best, but his direct opponent can be best on ground, Jesse.
Yeah, look, firstly to Jackson. I mean, we're talking about someone who went pick 3. They're relishing the fact that they're getting given the midfield time. And they were an absolute dominant player. 2 goals. That third quarter was ridiculous, almost midfield-like. Gives them an interesting one, what they do with Darcy. Look, in terms of Tristan, the first 2 weeks, his attack at the contest has been really good. So his tackle pressure, really good. I think he's been equal highest clearance player for us the first 2 weeks. I think he's actually in the top 10, 20 players in the comp for clearances in his first 2 games on average. So He's been really, 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 really solid there. So, look, better than I thought he would be, obviously, with the comments that I had about him preseason. He's been impressive around the contest. Where he is lacking is once the ball goes around the ground, especially against an agile ruckman like Luke Jackson, he wasn't going to be able to get down back and defend to keep him accountable. He doesn't have the speed to keep up with him around the ground. My main concern is, and I did a bit of a breakdown on this during the week, Tristan's is ranked at the moment last of all the ruckmen in the competition for hitouts to advantage. Now, it didn't...
God, that surprises me. God, he's getting his hands to it a lot.
Yeah, I went back and looked at a few of his because, as I said, I think from a contest perspective, he's been really, really solid. But so I went back and looked at it. A lot of the time, he gets his hand to it. He actually was higher than Jackson for hitouts on the weekend. So if I go to average hitouts at the moment, you know, he's 15th, okay? So not massive, but it's, you know, they're all on about par, all right? So they're all on about
Jesse, par. Jesse, I reckon we've got to give him...
Of course.
The time to adjust to playing with these guys, given that Goldstein's been tap rucking to these players for the last 5 or 6 years, and he hasn't had the chance to. So he hasn't got the bond with them yet to quite connect in the way that someone who's played, you know, guys for 50 or 60 games. So no, if he's getting his hands to it, I reckon eventually that'll come.
Yeah, I would argue that he's doing the hard part first for a ruckman, which is a lot of ruckmen just don't offer anything at the contest.
Yeah.
And he's doing that, which is something that we massively needed, especially if we're only going to play 4 midfielders for 90% of the game. You need your ruckman actually crashing in. So he's been ticked there. He's tackling pressure, clearance pressure, really, really good. His hitouts he needs to continue to work on. The reason I was highlighting it was more around the fact that it does put a lot more pressure on your midfielders to have to be proactive at the contest, which if you're only playing the 4-odd of them, does cook them further because they're the ones who have to be on the... I don't want to say the front foot because you always have to be on the front foot when you're playing in the midfield, but they have to be on the front foot and... It means that they can't necessarily read what Tristan's going to dish down to them. They kind of just have to, you know, react first. So, look, I think he's been positive the first 2 weeks. I've always said, you know, I think he can become a solid ruckman. He's not going to be your top echelon of ruckman. And I think someone like Jackson has the ability to do that. And I think it's a really rough gig having to go up against someone who's that mobile and able to do that much. But he got a coach's vote, and I think that shows that there was appreciation for what he was able to do, even against someone that was an absolute dominant player. So there's something to work on there. I'm not as worried about the ruck as I was going into the year. I'm more worried about who gives him the chop out when he needs a break. But that's got more to do with our forward line makeup.
Yeah, we'll segue to that right now. We'll go to the forward line, Frank. I guess with Tristan Sherry, just going back on that, I guess he goes against Mark Pitney this week, so it might suit his matchup rather than going against an athletic big like Luke Jackson, who's, you know, very athletic, freakish.
I don't think Pitney's playing.
No, who's their ruckman then? I don't even know.
Tom DeConning.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, that's similar to Luke Jackson. Way to bring me down, Frank.
That's all right. I mean, well, he didn't play round zero or whatever you want to call it. And they've had the bye, so I don't know where Pitney's at. But, yeah, DeConning will certainly, as far as mobility goes, that'll certainly test him.
Okay. Well, he's got the body strength against him, I suppose, so that's one thing. Well, Frank, while I've got you here, the forward line, to me it seems far too one-paced. When Fremantle are running in ways, they seem to get the ball out of there far too easily. It seems like it's just going to be an ongoing problem. We've got a mean half forwards, but we don't have any of them that are super quick. They're all of a similar skill set, Frank. Would you agree with that?
Dean. It started to come out far too easily. I don't think Jaden Stevenson's ever going to be renowned for his pursuit of his opponent. No. There's a couple of others that fall into that bracket, and then when you throw in Coleman Jones and Nick Larkey, they're not, you know, I guess they're not renowned for their defensive pursuits either. It can make it a little bit vulnerable. And there was a few times, Dean, I watched pretty closely in that third quarter where it started to come undone. A lot of those half forwards simply zoning off on those sort of on the kickouts as Fremantle transitioned out of our half forward line, guarding space and inviting the kick, and just not putting that pressure on to make them go long or kick to a contest. And I think until we tidy that up, we're going to be far too easy to score against, as Fremantle showed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's I can't see a solution either. I don't think we've got anyone come in and just fix that problem. So, yeah, we'll see how we go. But it seems like it's the biggest weakness in the team. Mark, CCJ, where is he at?
I knew you'd ask me about him. I just don't understand what we're hoping for here. He's got a little bit of confidence playing as a ruckman. He's got none as a forward, and he's not. And I'll just put it down to confidence at the moment. He's not aggressively attacking contests in the air. Although he took some marks early, and I thought, here we go. He's gonna prove me wrong. He's gonna have a big day, and then Gann just sort of disappeared. I don't think it's not an effort issue. I'm not concerned that he's not trying hard. Of course he is. All AFL players do. I just think he's a bit lost on the forward line. I don't know whether he understands the patterns or he just gets caught out of the wrong position, but I don't know. I mean, I'll look at someone like a Sellers, and of course it's convenient to say that because he's kicked six in an intra-club and six in a VFL match week one. He just looks like a natural forward who knows where to go. His leading patterns look so good that you go, that's what we want alongside Larky, just because he's dangerous. If he's leading, and you can't just zone off on a guy like that because he leads to dangerous places. So he will be, when he gets his chance, I don't think he'll be dropped again. That's my feeling about him. I think he's a very clever player, and now he's in an AFL professional program. He just seems to be getting better very, very quickly. I know Clarkson spoke about him today and sounded excited about him, and he would be, because he's kicking six goals a game at the lower level, and it's the way he's doing it, it looks so good. It's the opposite of Callum Coleman-Jones. I'd bring Coleman in. I'd find a way for him to potentially play a couple of minutes a quarter in the ruck to relieve Cherry. Sellers can do that a bit as well. And Larky, maybe I don't really like Larky playing in the ruck, but if Sellers is playing, then he can go to full forward while Larky does that. Danaher does it for Brisbane, so it's not the end of the world if Larky spends a couple of minutes a quarter in the ruck. They're going to have to do something, because Callum Coleman-Jones, you cannot have a guy on the side whose only value is 3 to 4 minutes playing the ruck every quarter, and they're useless for the rest of the game. 8 or 9 possessions and doing nothing else, it just isn't sustainable. Until he gets his confidence, and whatever that means, whether it's as a second ruck or as a key forward, but at the moment, he's sort of in no man's land. I just think, I don't like criticising an AFL athlete, because you have to be bloody good to get to the level they're at, but at the moment, he's just struggling.
Well, he's getting paid a lot of money too, Mark. So, it comes with the territory, unfortunately. If you get that much money, you're going to cop some criticism. I know he's had concussion issues in the last 12 months, similar to Jai Stinson. He's had 3 concussion issues, and he didn't, it delayed his preseason as well. He didn't come back till late, obviously.
No, that didn't help. No.
Yeah. But, maybe he just needs to go back to the reserves and find a bit of confidence, find a bit of form. And there's nothing wrong with that. It can happen to anyone, really. So, but at the moment, he's a real witch's hat up forward, especially when the ball's transitioning out of there. He can't seem to run after anyone, really. Jai Simkin, how did you like him as a high half forward? We talked a little bit earlier about the midfield. We need more midfield rotations. Only 9 CBAs. Do you think we stick with that for at least the short term, playing as a high half forward?
Yeah, look, that's my preference, because I think it allows players who are more, I don't want to say more talented, but players that we want to see in the mid. Like, you saw what Tom Power did on the weekend. You saw what Wardlaw did on the weekend. We know Aldi is a genuine mid. You wouldn't want to deduct from them too much. So the preference is for Simkin to play that high half forward role. You know, some people were a bit rough. It was some comments after the game. Some people actually went a bit rough on him. I thought it was outrageous
given he's just come back from that concussion.
Yeah, he's just come back from a concussion injury, and he kicked one goal, one. And that, you know, that second one wasn't a bad miss. I think it hit the post. So he's had 14 disposals and kicked one goal, one, coming back from injury, playing high half forward, which he hasn't played since maybe the first year of his career. Now, the only thing I will say, he didn't lay a tackle. If he's down there, he needs to be laying tackles. That's something that he needs to do. He needs to apply that pressure and show the other players how to apply pressure. But no, I've got no issue with it. I would have had him do, I would have liked for him to have maybe two or three more CBAs. I think he had about 8 or 9 for the game. You'd rather him maybe have, you know, 11 or 12. That takes a little bit, because he can play midfield. We know he can play midfield.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got someone who can, why wouldn't you give him a little bit more of an opportunity and give the others a bit of a rest?
With his tank chest as well, he would have spent 70% of his game doing defensive running from the half forward line.
Oh, of course.
And that's, you know, as a captain, that's what he does. He's very selfless. It's hard for him, because he could play in the midfield and get 30 possessions, no problem. That's where he's won 2 best and fairest.
Yeah, it's very selfless.
But he's sacrificed what he'd probably like to be doing for the good of the team in the long term. And he's the best runner at the club, and I can guarantee he's running up and back, doing defensive running patterns the whole bloody game. And you're right. When the ball's forward, he's got to, you know, lay some tackles. But I don't think he's forward that often. I think he's halfway up to their forward line half the time defending. But yeah, it's hard, because we've got 3 midfielders who are doing really well, but as you pointed out, we're cooked by half time. So they're going to have to get the balance right.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I think they've got to play a little bit more of something else in there. And Simkin can go in there and add some minutes. Absolutely, he can. That's why I was surprised about the Lazaro thing. So I have no issue with him playing high half forward. I actually like it as a role for him, pinch hitting in the midfield, predominantly playing high half forward. It's kind of like what we thought Taron was going to do, to be honest. So I've got no issue with him doing that. I have no issue with his leadership either. Some people were critical on that. I don't know what some people were expecting. So I definitely have him, you know, playing that role going forward. I think, you know, the more that they've got to work out is the, how do you, you know, get a Sellers into the team, move the CCJ, how do you get CCJ out of the team? How do you have a ruck? You know, what do we do with Zerha? Are we getting the most out of him that we can? There's some other questions to ask.
Segue to the reserves performance now. A convincing 39-point win over pretty much a Park football team, really. Northern Bullants. We looked at the teams on, I think it was Saturday, Jesse. We didn't recognise any Northern Bullants players, ex-AFL players. So, and we kicked pretty inaccurate as well. So a convincing win. Now, Sellers obviously kicked 6 goals. Miller Bergman had 29 touches, but unfortunately has sustained a broken jaw, a fractured jaw, and is out for roughly 6 weeks. Cooper Harvey got injured in the first quarter, so he has a syndesmosis injury and is out for 6 weeks, which hurts our depth. A couple of real blows there. Liam Shields, 33 touches. Will Phillips, 30 touches. Charlie Cobman, we've talked up, 16 touches, 7 marks. Hugh Greenwood, 14 tackles along with a goal. Robert Hanson could have, if he kicked straight, could have had a decent performance. The 4 behinds, they're the only ones I could probably see pushing for selection this week. Frank, Mark's talking up Tyler Sellers. It sounded like Alistair Clarkson pretty much said that, we'll select him soon. I'd be surprised if he isn't selected soon, or at least this year. It doesn't sound convincing that he'll be selected by Friday, but is it possible?
He's just foxing with you.
It's probably just going to come down to balance. I think me personally, I'd be concerned about exposing Sherry to more ruck time without a chop out, even though I completely agree that Coleman Jones is offering very little, even in the ruck. I don't think he's offering a lot, but he gives Sherry a break. I'm not keen on exposing Larky to too many centre bounces, which leaves Sellers as a, you know, not an undersized key forward, but he's not someone that can go into the ruck. And then your other option is you bring Comben in, and then you think, do you come in too tall if you bring Sellers and Comben both in at the same time? So I think Sellers' selection will come down to more of a balanced thing with the opposition. Looks like Carlton may only go in with De Conning. I think he took nearly all the centre bounces other than McKay for round zero. So I agree. I think it's not far away that he'll get a chance, Sellers. I just don't know whether it'll be this week.
Yeah, it doesn't sound convincing. You obviously think otherwise, Mark. You think he's foxing. Now, Hugh Greenwood could be an option as a second tall as well. 14 tackles, so good pressuring player, and can play as a second ruck, obviously, like I just talked about. Any of those players fancy you? I think you talked about Will Phillips, and you want Charlie Comben. I don't think he's going to play as a forward, Charlie Comben.
I think he's
just going to play as a defender now.
I think Corr's at risk this week. I think Comben will come in for Corr, and I think he needs a couple more weeks in the VFL to get his conditioning up, or depending on form, he might stay there for a while, because Pink looked great to me. As someone who improved from his first game to his second game, there's absolutely no reason not to let him play again. Mm. And Dawson's done nothing wrong from the preseason or through his first two games, so he's got to play. So Corr looks like he's underdone. So I'd be bringing in Comben. I think they desperately need a 200-centimetre big forward who's going to impose himself when they've got, especially with McKay, roaming around that forward line. I think they're going to need some help. So that's one. I think Phillips could come in for any number of players. They want to keep Lazaro in. I think Tucker's struggling. I think they need an extra player, because Jesse's point about them being the three main mids being cooked at halftime is probably right. And I think they could do with an extra inside mid like Phillips. Shields played well, but I mean, at the end of the day, Shields, as at the end of his career, Phillips is at the start. I don't think there's any real benefit to us playing Shields at this point in time, unless he's injured or we've got other leaders out, as we did in the first round. And then I think Sellers has to play. I can't see any reason to leave Callum Cameron-Jones in the side when you've got clearly a guy who knows he's got very smart forward craft, who will give Larky he will make Larky more dangerous, because right now, in the air, they can focus a lot on Larky. That said, Durs was getting more and more dangerous by the week. And obviously, you know, we've got Ford and you've got Zerha also dangerous in the air, but they need another key forward down there. Sellers is perfect for that. That would allow Larky to go into the ruck a couple of minutes per quarter. It'll leave Sellers at full forward. I think that'll be fine. It'll be a bit of a different mix, but that'll be okay. Because at the moment, I can't have a guy having eight possessions doing nothing when he really goes into the ruck and doing nothing forward. I think they've got to try something else. They've lost two games in a row. They've got nothing, not much to lose by doing something a little bit different this week. And I think Callum Cameron-Jones desperately needs some confidence, and he's not going to get it after the first two rounds and going again into another week. He needs to kick eight or nine in the reserves for two or three weeks in a row and come in like he did last year with some confidence, because at the moment he looks like he's got none.
Mm. What about you, Jesse? Any different thoughts to those boys?
No, look, mine are pretty similar to the guys. Look, as I said, the obvious ones for me, as I've said throughout the podcast, is I think the midfield mix needs to be a little bit different. We need to have a little bit more diversity in there so the guys aren't cooked. Yes, you want those three being the main guys, because I think we saw in the second and the first what those three are able to do, but I think we need to get a bit more midfield mix in there. I think from a down back perspective, the wings offered nothing last week. You know what I think on Tucker. I'd be interested to see what a McKercher or Sheasel would get a little bit more up the ground. I've said this. Sheasel had centre bounce attendances in the preseason. He did it towards the end of last year. There was a game against Sydney where him and Wardlaw were in there and almost won the game off their own, you know, off their own foot. Why is he not getting any centre bounce attendances? Are they just trying to ease us into the year? And then I don't know. But I'd be giving Sheasel some time in there. I'd be giving even potentially McKercher some time in there. McKercher looks like he'd be a perfect winger as well. He's got he's got a good kick, good tank. I'd love to see him distributing the ball into the 50. And I don't think you necessarily need both of them down back at the same time. So I'd like to see those guys flexed around a little bit. Bailey Scott, again, on the wing. So most of the stuff I've talked about. In terms of the forward structure, look, I've gone back on fourth on this all week. Sellers is a lock for me because we need someone with any semblance of forward craft down there to help Larky out. And we don't have another key forward who can do that at the moment. The other argument is, you just throw the Comden trial down back in the bin and you put him up forward because you know that he can do that. But I think we've got to endure with him down there. I'd absolutely play some AFL games with him down there. And I don't disagree with what Mark was saying. You know, Kaur has been rushed back. He's not adding anything at the moment, not adding anything defensively. I would argue he wouldn't be adding any leadership. If you're going to play one, I don't think you can play him and McDonald. So at this point in time, at their fitness level, I'd be letting Kaur get a bit more fitness, a bit more match fitness, and I'd be giving Comden a crack. This week,
half the leadership group's down the back line.
Yeah,
anyway.
Exactly. You've got Bailey Scott down there, Sheasel down there. Yeah. I think if you look at this week's matchup, so you've got Mackay and you've got Kerner. Dawson and Pink are going to try and take those two one-on-one because Kaur's not going to get back and help. I'd love to get a Comden in there to go down there, try and intercept in front of them a little bit. At worst, he's just able to jump in front of them and at least stop them from taking endless amount of marks. I think that is something that we absolutely need to do. Is we just need to rejig some things. The positive is I like the game style. We can see what we can do with it. We've got some real quality kids in there. But then we still have some players who won't be there long term. So I just think it's some minor tweaks. We just need some more forward craft up forward. We need a little bit more of a defensive mind down back. And I think we just, as I said, just need to give the midfield a bit of a chop out. So I don't think it's massive changes, which is good. But we go into a really tough run here of games, and I'd want to be, I want to be competitive for those games. If we get smacked in all of them, Carlton, Brisbane, Geelong, then the guys will probably drop their head and it's not going to be a great thing. So we need to be competitive. We need to crash in. If we somehow won any of those three, it'd be a miracle, but it would be absolutely fantastic. It'd be the biggest win we've had in years. So look, we have an opportunity here. There's a really good learning experience for the young group. But I think we're not helping them out. We need to make a few tweaks.
Frank, this is probably our grand final, pretty much for the year. It's our biggest game of the year. There's no doubt about that, the Good Friday game. It's important we put on a good performance at least and be competitive, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, Dean. Yeah. Despite what's happened in the first couple of weeks, I'm pretty confident, or I'm very hopeful, that those, shellackings, for lack of a better word, are behind us and that we're going to be reasonably competitive with most sides this year. And I don't see why we couldn't do the same against Carlton. We were in front of them last year at halftime in this game with a park back line. And I think the side that we'll put out on the park will be better than last year's. We definitely need to be super competitive and we need to, at three-quarter time, it'd still be a game that the neutrals will be watching.
Yeah, Mark, I mean, the AFL's got a gun to our head at the moment and they're waiting to pull a trigger. I mean, if we put up a competitive performance this week, there's always that risk, isn't there, that this game could get taken away from us, couldn't it?
I think we'll win this week, so I think it'll be a moot point. I think there'll be a big crowd there. I think it'll be full house like last year, and I think we'll beat Carlton. I think the only reason we lost last year is because we had Jack Siebel and Bonner as our key defenders. that we were super competitive. I think because of the importance to the club, I think the players are quietly confident. I think they realised the third quarter was a disaster last week. I think they know exactly what they need to do to fix it. I think George Wardlaw coming out and goes, I don't know why we're being shy about Northball. We should be bloody saying it's awesome. I mean, he goes, I don't know why Clarko's playing it down. I think we should embrace it. I love that. I reckon that's what's coming through with that this group of players. They're not interested in trying to win or lose respectfully. I think they were not happy with what happened on the weekend, and they're going to have a big crack this Friday. I don't be surprised if we cause an upset.
By the way,
Dersma and Curtis, and we haven't really talked about those guys, but Dersma and Curtis and Zerha, they all look bloody dangerous on the forward line, even Stevenson at times. So there's a lot of good players in that side. Like, you know, we've talked about the things we need to improve tonight, and probably less about the things that went well in that first half. But we're not anywhere near, you know, we're the youngest side in the comp. Things are going to go wrong, but there's a lot of things that were very exciting in that first half. I wouldn't be surprised if it clicks properly soon, and this time we'll be far enough in front to be able to hang on when it comes to the crunch. All it would have taken was two or three extra goals in that second quarter, and Freo would have dropped their heads. Would have been hard, but unfortunately, it went the other way. We missed a couple of easy ones. They got a couple of quick ones, and suddenly the momentum shifted. But we'll learn from that. We're not that far off.
Jesse, do you share that sort of optimism with Mark there that we're a big chance this week?
Oh, I don't want to say big chance. I think that might be a bit much. But look, what I will say, Carlton weren't overly impressive last week against the Tigers. Now, you know, the Tigers were actually pretty decent against Port on the weekend. But if you have a look at Carlton's first 2 weeks, yes, absolutely, very impressive, especially the second half against Brisbane. You know, kudos to them. But there is some holes there. There is some gaps. They lost the clearance game against the Tigers. So they lost clearances, centre and stoppage. They got the ball on the outside, and that's how they really won the game. But they lost.
And that's because Richmond are lazy. They've been lazy.
Oh, yeah, they're the worst team. Worst team at clearance.
Yeah.
For years, they've been that. And so they lost the clearance game. Against Brisbane, they lost the clearance game. There's an opportunity there because that is our strength. If we can beat them at the contest, get the ball out, we're a chance. Now, they are going to bring some players back this week. I saw Wiedering's back. I saw a couple others, Marchbank, etc.
No Walsh.
No Walsh, which is great for us. But they've got a few really quality players coming back. But, you know, the match fitness won't be there. So there is an opportunity for us to capitalise. There's an opportunity because they've got players coming back from injury. If we can play fast football and tire them, there is a chance. There is a chance. So look. I'm not 100 by any means saying that it's impossible that we're going to win. I thought we played really well against them last year, but to the exact point Mark made, we had a midfielder and a VFL midfielder playing playing key defense. So you know, we're a chance. We're absolutely a chance.
All Australian full forwards due for a big game too.
Tristan Jerry.
Christian's okay. Leave him alone. He's had a great start to the year.
But I wasn't being sarcastic there, Mark. Future All Australian Tristan Sherry.
Well, he will be an All Australian, but Larky is an All Australian, and he needs to show that this week.
Yeah, I completely agree. He's been okay to start the year. I wouldn't say he's been in the his best form. No. So, yeah, look, there's some work that he needs to do. And I think that will be helped when we aren't running a particular other player down there and we're giving him a little bit more help.
Have Sellers playing, leading around him. That'll confuse the opposition.
And you saw how they worked in the preseason together. They worked well in tandem in that game that we played.
They're both very clever players. That's the thing. So they will understand what to do between themselves.
Well, they're both forwards, which helps.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, you've actually got people there who are forwards. So
Callum Coleman-Jones at the moment has got the forward craft of Majak Dor, which is not being nasty to Majak Dor, but that's why he ended up in the back line because he just couldn't work out leading patterns on the forward line. And unfortunately, Callum Coleman-Jones cannot do it at the moment.
No, I completely agree. Completely agree with the sentiment. He just He always overruns the ball. He took a, I think what got me is there was a couple of times, Dean, where on the weekend, as you said, we were sitting together where he took a mark or did something and we were like, geez, he took a mark. That's great. And we were almost...
And that was on the wing.
Yeah, and we were almost praising him for things that really, if we're being honest with ourselves, should be probably non-negotiables if for a key forward.
Yeah.
Like, we're not asking for a lot from him.
We want him to do well. He needs some confidence. Yeah. He needs to come into the side when he's feeling good about himself and he's clunking marks and everything else. At the moment, it's going to keep damaging his confidence playing the role that he's playing.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I'd be surprised almost if he is picked this week, whether it's Tyler Sells or Hugh Greenwood that comes in.
Well, I think I'll go Greenwood. I'm of the opinion, I'm a little bit pessimistic about Sellers as well, because even when he got picked up in the preseason, Clarko didn't seem that excited by him, to be honest. Maybe,
don't reckon Clarko would have mentioned it. Clarko mentioned him today because he's on top of his mind. I don't know. He said if he doesn't play this week, it's going to be soon. And he's probably thinking, that's just, I reckon that was to throw people off. I reckon Clarko's excited to bring him in.
I'll
be gutted. I'll be gutted if he doesn't play this week.
I'll be gutted. I would be absolutely gutted if he doesn't play this week. I think he has to.
Six goals 2 weeks in a row. The guy's adapting to an AFL environment like nothing else. You've got to give him a crack now. And he's the sort of bloke who'll come in on a big game on a Friday and he'll kick two or three. I'll just give him a crack. I'd love to see him play this Friday.
And a few games added. Whoever they bring in, whatever they have to do, no more of this one game in, one game out. You've got to give people the opportunity to play, you know, some games against one another. And with one another, I mean. So, there's a real need there.
That's a good point, which is back to the whole Toby Pink, Callum Dawson thing. After round one, half a lot of supporters say, "Oh, Pink's no good. Get rid of him." Poor bastard had only played a game.
Yeah, I think I said on the Thursday night that you could have had, you know, Rance or Scarlett down there the way the midfield pressure we were playing, and they wouldn't have been able to stop him.
Me included, I didn't think Charlie Lazaro would be on the list beyond this year, but he has a great preseason. Suddenly he's in the 22. Things change quickly. You just got to. Players that are under age of 24 and play less than 50 games, you've got to give them some time. It's not like, you know, Turner, who had been around the club for 10 years and everyone had seen what he could do and they're getting frustrated that he'd reached his ceiling and wasn't going to get beyond it. You know, there's a difference with guys that are like 21, 22 or even Pink, who's 24, but hasn't played an AFL game yet. You've got to give them a chance to adapt. It's like, it's not easy.
No, it's definitely not an easy game. And
to Turner too, by the way. I wasn't meaning to have a go at him. He was a great servant of the club.
No, he played over 100 AFL games. Frank was a big fan, along with the redheads in the team. So, yeah, Frank wants Toby Pink and Blake Drury never to play a game, don't you, Frank? We've unpacked a lot here tonight, boys. We've been talking well over an hour. Frank, did you want to add anything else before I let you go?
No, just hopefully everyone can get there on Friday and make it a good crowd, if nothing else. And hopefully, Mark is and Jesse are on the right track, and that we can actually cause an upset. But I'll head out there. Very excited again. Haven't missed a good Friday game, I think the first win isn't too far away. So here's hoping.
Yeah, I think it's pretty close to a sellout. If it isn't, I did hear earlier today that it was very close to a sellout. So we will get a bigger crowd than last year, probably. So, Mark, any final words for all your fans out there?
the old damaged brand. What I will say is. It's such a great cause that's coming up this week. And I know no one would argue with that. So let's all do what we can to help as much as we can for the Royal Children's Hospital, because that's probably the most important thing coming up this Friday, as much as we always love our footy. It's a great thing for the club to be involved in, and I'm hoping that it's another great day for the Royal Children's Hospital.
And that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's about, really. That's the most important thing. And that's a good final message there, Mark. Jesse, any final words?
No, look, I think we've said it all tonight. There's some changes I think we need to make. But look, I'm really, you know, despite how disappointing moments of the weekend were, that first half was pretty electric. And I think for North fans out there who are doubting, go back and watch that first half because it shows where we're heading.
Yeah, definitely. I might even do that in my time off in the next couple of days. And we'll see how we go. Hopefully we can continue it for, you know, 3.5 to 4 quarters on Friday. Well, that's all I have for you boys. Frank, thanks so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Dean, and Mark and Jesse.
Yep, a shout out to all the red edits out there for Frank. Yep. Mark, yeah, always a pleasure with you, mate. I'm sure I'll chat to you soon.
Good on you, boys. Thank you very much, Dino.
Jesse, thanks for coming on. We decided probably in the last hour that you could join us tonight, so appreciate you coming on.
No, thank you for having me.
So that was a very long episode, and thank you very much to those boys, Mark, Jesse, and Frank, for coming on once again. There was lots to go through, and yeah, it was a really good chat. I really enjoyed it. So that's it for tonight's episode. Don't forget to hit up Mark Beach Jones, B-E-E-C-H Jones, on X if you want a ticket to the North Melbourne versus Brisbane gather round game. That's, it's obviously next week, isn't it? It would be next week, round 4, is that right? Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I'm only looking to this Friday. I'm not trying to look too far ahead, but I'm pretty sure it's round 4. So just hit him up on X. Otherwise, he will put it back on Ticketek. So if you want to go to that game. So anyways, I'll be back later this week on Thursday. I will try and get Siobhan Rowe. I'm not too sure if she's available. I probably should message her and maybe someone else. So we'll see you then. So that's it for tonight. I hope you enjoyed tonight's episode. Bye for now and go Roos. Oh, also, thank you very much to all you lovely listeners for all the likes, retweets and comments you all put out for the show. It is much appreciated. Telling your friends as well. That's how I seem to get most of the listeners, by you passing on the message to your friends, family, whoever it is. So yeah, I really appreciate it. So that's it. That's my final message. Bye for now and go Roos.